And welcome to another edition of the Odyssey Radio Show. I'm your host, Mike Schultz. We talk about ancient mysteries all across the globe, and we'll do some of that later in the hour tonight. But first, we're going to talk about some health topics tonight. We're going to talk all about herbology and how the power of herbs can make your life better. So I've invited a master herbalist on the show. Her name is Carmela Cook, and she owns a herbal store in Portland, Oregon. So welcome to the show, Carmela.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, it's called an apothecary, and many people may not quite know what that word is. I know my grandparents used to go to an apothecary, so why don't you tell us what that is?
An apothecary is a place where you go for healing. They used to use them, herbal pharmacists is what that term used to be hundreds of years ago. That's what an apothecary was. You go to get your herbal mixture that will cure whatever ails you.
Okay, great. So why don't you tell us about a little bit how you got into herbology and your training?
I started, it's been about 10 or 12 years now. My mother was diagnosed with lung cancer, and I watched my father go through that many years previous, and I didn't want to watch that same thing happen to my mother. So I started investigating herbs, went to volunteer for a well-renowned herbalist in the area, and did that for about 10 years before I went on to get my accreditation through the Australasian College of Health and Sciences.
Okay, I see. So you've set up a store that's really interesting. It's kind of like floor to ceiling, all of these different potions and herbs, but it's fun to play around with them, I'm sure. But tell me a little bit about the difference between like the dry herbs and the liquid herbs.
We have liquid extracts, which are much more potent than a bulk herb would be.
Okay.
And much more convenient to take. Of course, it's always best to try to get the herb in its natural form. If you can get it out of your garden, that would actually be the ideal state to take it. It's a live food at that point, so you're going to get the maximum benefit out of that. But the teas are wonderful. If you enjoy drinking beverages, it's not always convenient to do so. So I like to offer the extracts as well.
Okay, and so what are some of the main issues? Like, what's the number one thing people come to you for?
Oh, there are so many different things.
Okay.
In our culture and society, we're bombarded with toxins. We breathe them in every day. They're in our foods, in our beverages, and all across the board, toxicity is probably the main cause of most of our ailments. But we have a lot of people come in for arthritis, common cold, cancer patients come in that don't want to take. Chemotherapy is the alternative. So all across the board, we just have different ailments come in on a constant basis.
So let's start with detoxification. What could you do, just as an example, if somebody came in and wanted to purify their life?
Well, there are lots of different things you could do. I try to stay away from just using herbs. In allopathic medicine, that unfortunately seems to be the rule. You treat the symptoms instead of the actual cause. So we try to treat everything from the symptoms to the mental and emotional issues that might be present, your environmental toxins that you're coming into contact with. So we start from dietary changes, try to keep your stress level under control, and then we work with different herbs such as burdock root. Dandelion, which most people consider a weed in their garden, in their yard,
sure,
is actually extremely potent herb. It's full of potassium and vitamins. Wonderful for anemia, wonderful for purifying the blood, the liver, the bladder, the kidneys. So what you consider a weed actually might be a cure for your health problems.
Well, can we use it right out of the garden?
Absolutely. You just want to make sure that you're in a soil that's not toxic, so you haven't sprayed it with your weed killers or your chemicals.
And how would you use it? How would you prepare it?
You could put it in a salad. You can make a tea out of it. You can make an extract. There's many different ways to take the herbs.
Okay, or, you know, you would have the right formula prepared if you wanted to
absolutely,
an herbalist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I just want to let people know, I don't just randomly have people on my show. I've gone to you, you've helped me, I came to you with a bad back.
Mm-hmm.
You prescribed something called Nervines, which were extremely relaxing to me. Why don't you talk about Nervines?
Nervines are wonderful stress relievers. They work on calming the nervous system. Some really great Nervines is Skullcap. It's a very safe and effective Nervine. Keeps your stress level under control, relaxes your muscles, Kava Kava is one of the most well-known muscle relaxants.
Mm-hmm.
St. John's wort is a nervine. That's gotten a lot of interesting feedback over the years.
Right.
You know, you get a lot of people saying, you know, don't take St. John's wort in large doses, just like anything else. Some herbs can be toxic. So the rule of thumb is everything in moderation, and that goes from diet to herbs mm-hmm. to you name it. Nothing should be done in excess. When that starts happening, that's when our bodies start to break down.
Okay. Now, a few years ago, I remember seeing Kava Kava in every health food store, and now it's really hard to find. What is going on with Kava Kava? Was that banned, or what happened with it?
No, it's still available commercially. We carry it in our shop.
Okay.
But the problem is once the commercial industry gets a hold of something,
right.
Let's say Ma Hung, for example,
mm-hmm.
That now is banned. Unfortunately, people started using that over-the-counter in so many diet form weight loss regimens. And in huge doses, it's toxic.
Oh.
You know, it can damage your liver. It can wreak havoc all across your body.
Okay.
But it's a wonderful herb for, say, asthma and treating asthma. But anything you take and abuse,
mm-hmm.
it's going to have adverse side effects.
I see. So. Now, what about ginseng? Is that truly like an energy elixir?
Yes.
Is it?
It's an amazing adaptogen, which means it brings the body back to overall health. It's great for rebuilding your adrenal glands, which is so important to our immune function. But as an energy builder, it's something that you take over time. You're not going to get instant energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that builds up in the body to give you that energy.
Okay, so when we go to a convenience store and we see ginseng, it won't immediately give us a boost, or
no,
maybe psychologically it might.
Exactly. Psychologically it probably will, but it's something that you take over time.
I see. Because it's funny how people do run with these herbs commercially.
Yes.
And just say, oh, ginseng, you know, instant energy, take this pill.
Right.
But you're telling us kind of the real story here. Now, what about, when you work with me on my bad back, you did some muscle testing.
Mm-hmm.
Explain how you would incorporate muscle testing to find out people's problems.
It's a form of kinesiology, and it was founded by a chiropractor many years ago, and it's essentially just asking your body what is necessary and appropriate for your healing, an individual healing. It's terrible how, especially in allopathic medicine today, everybody is lumped together. And people don't treat people as individuals anymore.
Okay.
And that's unfortunate because if you have to take the diet into consideration, you have to take your stress level into consideration. Everybody is an individual, so it's irresponsible to lump everybody together. So kinesiology helps to get feedback. An herb that might be good for me might not work for you. And so in order to identify which is which, we do muscle testing.
So when a person raises their arm, if you push it down and is like strong resistance,
mm-hmm.
what would that mean?
That means that would be compatible and necessary for you to take.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then if your arm immediately comes down, then there's a problem.
Right. It's not for you. Try something new.
Okay, gotcha. Now, with the elixirs, it appears that you do quite a combination, correct? I mean, you're getting, I think I have like 10 in my elixir.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes,
so
and that's another reason we do kinesiology, to
okay.
find out which herbs are also going to be compatible, not just with you, but with each other. And you'll hear a lot of feedback. Different herbalists are really opposed to having more than one or two or three herbs in one formula.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And then you have others, like myself, that herbs are very synergistic, and in the right combination, they are mm-hmm. very powerful. And so I like to do a little larger formula items in my formulas than most because then you're getting the maximum benefit of all those herbs. You're getting your nutrition, you're getting your adaptogens, which are bringing your body back to health, and
mm-hmm.
you're just getting a better, well-rounded formula.
Do you have any that are kind of like multivitamins and minerals?
Oh, absolutely.
What would that
all
be?
Of your algaes are uh-huh. really, really high in your nutrients.
Okay.
They fight the free radicals. Those are essential to body health.
Okay, so would that take the place of a multivitamin? Or?
Yes, and maybe I shouldn't say this because
okay.
I guess I better not. But I will say this. I won't name any names, but
okay.
There are some vitamin companies out there, especially when you're buying them in those pressed capsules.
Exactly, yeah.
Most of those are fillers.
Wow.
You're getting a very small percentage of the actual herb or vitamin that you think you're getting.
Oh, okay.
So I try to stay away from those if I can. In fact, I don't take them at all myself. And I go for the natural herb.
I always wonder if those pills dissolve in the body or just kind of go right through.
Most of them go right through.
Oh.
Yeah, we can't even assimilate them in our urinary and intestinal tract.
Okay, so I need to be visiting you soon then to get some. Is it called algae? Like algae from the ocean?
Yes, algae and the cholera, kelp, spirulina. Those are great seaweeds.
Okay, and they're full of like the A and B vitamins and C and D and
yes,
all of that. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
What about the minerals like iodine and calcium and magnesium?
Yes.
They're all in there too?
They're in your kelp.
Okay, great. I'm glad you told me that. Now, why don't you take a minute and talk about your store and how people can get a hold of you, because this is a nationwide show.
Oh.
Not everybody's in Portland, so talk about the store. It's quite unique, and how people can get in touch with you.
Well, our store is called Essential Elements Apothecary, and we're based in Portland. We do have a website that's under construction right now. We actually just opened our store in February, so it's still a little new, and our website's under construction, but it's hawthornapothecary.com, and we can also do mail orders. We can call for any questions or concerns or comments that you might have, and our number is 503-231-2831. I don't know if that's information.
Yeah, we'll give that out a few times. Because
okay.
definitely, you know, people will have to contact you by phone until the website gets up and running.
Right.
But clearly, you know, you have a way with not talking over people's heads, and that's really important.
Oh, well.
Because it can be complex.
Right. Well, I'm a consumer as well, so, you know,
right.
And a lot of people are unfamiliar with, like, what they call alternative medicine, but it's not alternative at all. It's traditional. It's completely here before we were, so.
right. It's been around since the first, you know, gardening and
exactly.
And villagers, you know, turning to tonics and all of that. So let's move on to, let's say weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say somebody comes to you, they're overweight, need to lose 50 pounds. What could you do?
Well, first we discuss diet options.
Mm-hmm.
And then we address different factors in their life. We test for, make sure that the thyroid is under control, because thyroid can, you know, have a, especially people that say, I diet all the time, I exercise, I don't lose weight. So you have to make sure that there's not some underlying medical condition that's causing the issue.
Okay.
And then there are different herbs that you can use. There are natural appetite stimulant or repressants, chickweed being one of those, ginseng, fenugreek is great for ridding the body of excess fat. But it's going to be an overall regimen. It's not going to be an instant cure, which unfortunately a lot of people come to me and expect an overnight cure.
Right. It
just
takes time.
Doesn't happen that way.
Right. With mine, it took about a week
to
really kick in, but then I really felt it.
Right. Well, and that's part of our society. You know, we go to the doctor, they give us antibiotics, and oftentimes they give us antibiotics that we don't need. Antibiotics are only good at treating bacteria.
Okay.
And so if you go to and you have a virus and a doctor, people go and they want something. So a doctor will give you an antibiotic knowing that it's not going to do any good against that virus.
Mm-hmm.
But they're under such pressure to get something to the patient that they, you know, are over-prescribing medicines.
Right. Now, I have a theory about diet that when people are craving, like, sugars and salts, what they're actually craving is vitamins and minerals.
Yes.
So if they were to have this algae and all of this kelp, they may not have the strong cravings anymore.
Right.
Do,
and
do you,
are
do
much
you agree
more
with that theory? Or?
What's that?
Do you agree with that theory? Or?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to mention one really amazing supplement that you can take is bee pollen. It has all the vitamins, amino acids, proteins, everything that the body needs to survive. You can actually survive on bee pollen and water alone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing. It's used in Europe to treat over 90 different ailments.
And what form would you take it in?
In the granules. It comes in a, you can get it locally. You can get, we carry a form called Jara bee pollen. That's out of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Very potent, very high quality. And it allergies. There's nothing better for treating allergies than bee pollen.
That's amazing. I've never heard about that.
Yeah.
Maybe we should get into conspiracies a little bit, but do you think the established medical association just doesn't want this information out?
Oh, of course. You know, I fight this. Well, let's take a look at, in 96, Oprah had a doctor on, and they were talking about mad cow disease.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, she was sued.
Sued.
For bringing a little bit of information to the public because it was stepping on the American Medical Association's toes and causing...
Yeah.
It, well, potentially, you know, Oprah's a pretty powerful woman, so whatever she says, people tend to listen to. And mm-hmm. So that's a multi-billion dollar industry that she might be affecting.
Right.
So she had a lawsuit brought up against
her. And that sent a message out to other media and reporters to just... Don't go down that road. You're going to get sued or something, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So anything that might treat a disease cheaply or quickly is something that, you know, is against the status quo.
Right. Well, not necessarily cheaply or quickly, but naturally.
Naturally.
You know, when you're giving pharmaceuticals, oftentimes the cure that you're taking mm-hmm. is worse than your original ailment.
The side effects are pretty bad.
Exactly.
But there's a lot of money in surgery and treatment and hospitalization.
Yes.
And what you're saying with something like bee pollen is, you know, it could cure people right at home, potentially.
Absolutely.
So just on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. That's good to know about that. Let's talk about the common cold. What kind of herbs would you take to combat that?
Well, the common cold, okay, there's two approaches. I'm a vitalist. I believe that when your body is in balance, and that means your diet and you're taking nourishing foods and herbs, your body innately wants to heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
So a vitalist approach would be to take an herb that's going to make you cough. It's called an expectorant.
Mm-hmm.
And so it loosens up that phlegm, and it makes you cough and expel it from your body. Now, an atomistic approach would be to suppress that, to take the symptoms away, giving you the illusion that you're being cured. But it just doesn't, that's a wrong, I don't want to say wrong, it's a poor choice to make, because what you're doing is more harm to your body in the long run. So something like a cold, it's a virus, it has to work itself through.
I see.
So you can take, at that point, what I do is I fast for a couple days. I'll do juices, fresh vegetables, fruits, bee pollen, nourishing
mm-hmm.
herbs,
Mm-hmm.
expectorant herbs. Something, mullein is a good expectorant herb. Yarrow. These will loosen up that phlegm, get it out of your system, shorten the lifespan of the cold.
Okay. Now, you have a tea that you sell, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a mixture of herbs for the common cold?
Yes.
Okay. So, and what's in that?
We have some slippery elm and some mullein,
mm-hmm.
wild cherry, and that's something that they've used for hundreds of years. That's what they make cough syrup out of. Most of your cough syrups taste like cherry.
Cherry, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that's why.
From the cherry bark of the
now
tree,
we know.
Though.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's a mixture. Let's talk about what are some of the other ailments people come in for?
High blood pressure is a common one.
Okay.
And that's something that can easily be taken under control by just, you know, alleviating stress alone.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Just if someone comes in and they're stressed out, what would you put them on generally?
Those would be the Nervines.
Okay.
Those would be like the skull caps and Kava Kava, St. John's wort. Those are some good Nervines that you can take.
Mm-hmm.
However, garlic, something so common that is a culinary food,
sure.
is a really powerful medicine.
Oh.
It's a natural antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
It's an adaptogen. It can regulate blood pressure and reduce cholesterol in the body.
Okay.
It's an overall amazing food. I highly recommend taking
garlic.
That regularly.
Okay. What are some other foods right in our kitchen that we can be taking to help us with our health?
So, of course, the garlic.
Uh-huh.
Turmeric, which is a spice that people put in foods, is an excellent herb for anti-tumor effects.
Okay.
It can actually help, and I got to be careful because I don't have a
right.
license to be a doctor, so I have to be careful that I
there's a line.
Can't say cure and treat, but it has been known to have anti-tumor effects.
Okay.
Let's talk about some weeds in your garden.
Sure.
Other than the dandelion, of course. You have stinging nettle. That's extremely high in nutrients, especially iron. That's really good for treating anemia, for allergies, an overall tonic for your body to recuperate.
Stinging nettle. So could someone just chop that up and make a tea out of it?
Well, you don't want to touch it and get stung.
Okay. That's why it's called stinging nettle.
You have to be very careful in harvesting.
Okay.
But, yes, you make a tea out of it. You want to dry it. Usually I like to dry nettle and then prepare it in a tincture or a tea.
Okay. Now, how long is a dried herb good for?
Depends on how it's... You have to make sure the process... Research the process for drying your herbs from your garden. I can't stress education. You know, somebody might seem highly educated in what they're saying. Always do your own research.
Okay.
But generally, a dried herb is good for about 2 years.
Oh, quite a while then.
Yeah.
Okay.
In an airtight, in perfect conditions.
Okay.
So we're talking not over 70 degrees, no direct sunlight.
And it should be airtight then. That would help a lot.
Definitely airtight. Air is horrible for herbs. It starts to break down.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of these teas may have, from large companies, may have been sitting on shelves for months or...
Exactly.
Or what have you. We don't know.
Yep. Very true.
So do you have a supplier for all your dried teas or herbs, or how do you get it?
We have a few different distributors that we have, and they're all wildcrafted or organic herbs that we use. We do some of our own drying, and we have a garden in the back of our shop.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew there was something back there, but I hadn't gone back.
Yeah.
Great. So you're actually growing some of your own.
We do.
Uh-huh.
So as much as we can, we try to do it that way. But we carry over 400 different bulk herbs and spices. So.
Oh, that many?
Yeah, so it's impossible for us to do them all on our own.
Well, what about things like, you know, basil and thyme and, you know, just kind of the common herbs? What was that song? Rosemary?
Yes. Absolutely. Actually, thyme is one of your best immune stimulant herbs. And it's really good for coughing, bronchitis. Rosemary's amazing for elevating your mood. It's in a lot of depression formulas, other than being nutritive and also good for the lungs.
Okay.
Yeah, and what was the other one you said?
Basil, did we talk about
basil? Basil's a nutritive. Again, an expectorant, good for the lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and these are all things that you can grow in your own garden instead of having to buy them from the store. So.
Right. It's just fresher and live food.
Yes.
So let's pause for a moment again and talk about your store a little bit, what you have and what's available nationwide.
Like I said, I like to work on body, mind, spirit. So we don't just treat with the herbs. We also have vibrational remedies, which work on the mental, emotional connection to the problem. A lot of people are unfamiliar with that aspect of healing. And symptoms that we produce, diseases, ailments, are your body's way of saying, hey, pay attention because something is imbalanced here.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take, for instance, lungs.
Okay.
If you have a chronic condition within your lungs, think back to when that condition started and what happened in your life at that time.
Uh-huh.
Lungs, the mental emotional connection to lungs is grief, deep-seated grief.
Right.
Something happened that just hurt you to the core. So maybe you get bronchitis on a regular basis. Every year you get bronchitis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when did that start and maybe why? So start researching, not just, you know, I have this symptom, let me treat this symptom. Find out what caused that symptom.
So mental is a big part of it. And
absolutely.
Kind of maybe release that karma and forgiveness and healing is part of it.
Yes.
Okay, good. So what about, you briefly mentioned arthritis in the beginning. Talk about what you would do with somebody with symptoms of arthritis.
Okay. Diet. You have to look at what you're eating. There is uric acid in many foods. I'm going to say it.
Okay.
And if it happens, I get the fallback from it, so be it.
Okay.
Red meat.
Red meat, okay.
Dairy products. Yogurt's okay. It's fermented.
Oh.
But cheese, ice cream, milk,
Full of uric acid, then.
Full of uric acid, peanuts, Brazil nuts. Stress will elevate uric acid levels in the blood.
Okay.
And what happens at that point is that uric acid will crystallize, especially if there's already a present injury. And it will go to that space, and it will be like tiny little knives that rub together and wear away at that muscle and connective tissue,
mm-hmm.
causing, obviously, immense pain and inflammation. So eliminate those foods for a little while.
See what happens. Huh?
Get your stress under control, and then take some herbs that are nourishing to the body that will purify your blood, burdock root, yellow dock root, prickly ash bark. It's an amazing blood purifier. Dandelion, again, dandelion root and dandelion leaf.
Uh-huh.
These are amazing blood purifiers. Plantain, which is another weed out in your garden or in your yard.
Okay.
I say garden because we have it in our garden.
Right.
but that's an amazing blood purifier. It's great for wounds. Say you cut yourself and you're out in the middle of nowhere. You have nothing. You crunch up some plantain, put it on there. Not only are you using it as an antiseptic, but it will also stop the bleeding.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And it's an anodyne, so it will help with the pain as well.
Mm. What about aloe vera? Is that considered an herb? Or
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And what do you think of drinking it, the juice?
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I highly recommend it.
Okay, and I take it you're a vegetarian, correct?
Yes, I am.
So, okay, red meat. So how do you get your protein?
Bee pollen. I take
uh-huh.
bee pollen on a daily basis. I also take other nutritive herbs to get my vitamin content. Beans are high in protein.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a vegetarian because I don't like the taste of meat. I don't like the way that our food is processed. It's
right.
full of all of these toxins. And most people don't even want to know what's going on. Not just in the meat industry, but in the vegetable industry as well. We're eating irradiated food daily.
Right.
And
do you
that's so
go to a
dangerous.
Farmer's market, or where do you get your vegetables?
Organic.
Okay, so you
yes.
go to a health food store or
yes.
Whole Food or something?
Absolutely, because a lot of times even the farmers don't realize the toxic waste that's being put into fertilizers.
Okay.
And it's not a law that it has to be on the label.
Oh, I
so,
see. Now, I cut back on fish because of the mercury issues,
mm-hmm.
actually, in the ocean. I don't know how many people are aware of that.
Yes.
But, these are issues, our politicians need to deal with.
Absolutely.
And it's just not happening. But, so you don't eat fish either, then?
I don't eat. Occasionally, I will eat some fish.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the toxins that store in the fat, so you want to get a fish that's not really fatty. Or if it is, you want to make sure that it's from a source that has not been in a polluted area.
Okay.
Oftentimes it just takes asking questions. And if somebody can't answer your questions, don't get it. It's as simple as that. So
the bottom line with all of this is vitality, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, so many people are not vital, but, every time I've seen you, you seem like a very energetic, vital person. So that's kind of the whole payoff, isn't it?
Yes. And, I've had my own share of toxins that I've consumed. I mean, we live in a culture where that's just not possible to avoid.
No.
So it's going to be a preventative issue more than anything. Make sure that you're taking your immune-boosting herbs or foods.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to overcook your vegetables. That's really important.
Okay.
Because once it reaches a certain temperature, your vitamins are lost. Same with microwaving.
Kills
once
them.
You microwave a food, your vitamins, there's nothing left.
Right.
So
and
it takes a little longer. It's inconvenient. But what's better, getting sick or staying healthy?
Like a TV dinner, they've lost their chi. They've lost their life energy, whatever's in that TV dinner.
Absolutely.
It's gone.
Yes.
So we're winding down now. Any kind of last thoughts or topics we've missed on herbs that you want to tell the public?
Again, it's not just about treating the symptoms with herbs. It's an overall preventative measure. You eat organic is a little more expensive, but it's so worth it in the end. And if people have any questions and want to talk to me more about this, please do call, or you can go email me. We're essentialelementsapothecary@gmail.com. I would love to give you more information and talk more on these topics, but it's not just about one thing or another. You're going to have to treat it all as a whole. your diet, your mental, emotional, your environmental factors, and your preventative steps.
Right, and what people can do on Yahoo or Google is type in essential elements, and it you should come right up.
Yes,
in Portland,
essential
Oregon,
elements apothecary.
Because that's the easiest way to find you.
Yes.
And I'll be in to get my vitamins. I want to try bee pollen and
Excellent.
The algaes and kelp.
Absolutely.
And because I'm taking a vitamin pill right now, so I want to see the difference. I want these minerals to really assimilate in the body.
Yes.
And not just go right through.
Absolutely.
Okay, Carmela, you're great. Give out your phone number one more time, and then...
It's 503-231-2831.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Carmela Cook, Master Herbalist. Thank you for being on Odyssey.
Thank you, Mike.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, she was great. So, like I said, I met her personally and just really felt that I wanted to share her with my audience and share her knowledge. And definitely, if you're in Portland, visit her store right on Hawthorne. So now we're going to talk about ancient mysteries. That's I always try to talk about my main topic, which is the ancient astronaut theory, which came into prominence in the late 1960s with the publication of the book called Chariots of the Gods. That became a film, and it became pretty prominent, pretty well known and viewed all across the world. And from there, hundreds of researchers jumped into this arena and started more and more uncovering this knowledge that the Bible briefly alludes to when they talk about the Nephilim or the Anakim or the giants or the Rephaim. These giants who used to be present on our planet that were 15 feet tall. Who were they? What did they want? What was their agenda? So this is the whole ancient astronaut theory. But they definitely appeared to have different methods of construction. They left behind very heavy stone monuments and ziggurats and pyramids. So I've just written, I'm working on my fifth DVD now. The third one is out, Mystery Islands. But I'm going to give you some info from my fifth one that's in the process of writing right now. So we're going to go over to Ireland, and I'm going to talk about the round ancient stone towers. Let's journey to Ireland and examine the mysterious round towers that dot the landscape. Generally, they are referred to as medieval artifacts, but their origins stretch back further. The stone monuments found all throughout Ireland date back to at least the 11th century, and some of the foundational work dates back to the 4th century. 70 towers still remain in the Irish countryside, and 3 are in Scotland. Some of them soar to heights of over 100 feet. They share the same unique architectural features. The entrance was above ground level, and a stepladder was climbed to get inside. The ladders were permanent, so it doesn't appear to be a fortress, or means of hiding from enemies. Two walls of block and mortar construction were built a few feet from each other, and the inner space was filled with sand and rock rubble. A similar technique was used by the Romans, though they never conquered this far north. There is speculation that the towers were built by traveling masons or Christian missionaries from England or Rome. Regardless, the architecture is a methodical blueprint that is followed closely in all the towers, most likely by a specific group of people. There is a strange lack of reference to the towers in the Christian church history of Ireland. According to historian H.O. R. Bryan, they were built long ago by a race of gods or giants, an offshoot of the Anunnaki. He believes that their leader was a female goddess named Daru, and they settled on these islands of the west and conquered the areas around Ireland. These towers of fairly advanced construction design, which outlived all of the Celtic churches of the era, were the dwellings of the giants, or the Anunnaki, and a place of sun and moon worship. So as detectives in this mystery, we're always looking for advanced construction relics that are all around the world and still standing, that were way ahead of their time, or way ahead of what villagers or nomads would have built. And so these Irish stone towers, and you can Google or Yahoo those three words, and see pictures of them. Like I said, 73 are still standing in this area. It's quite fascinating. So let's move over to France now. Megaliths of France. Now let's journey to the rugged, rocky northern coast of France, to a magical, enchanted area known as Brittany. This land has been fought over and occupied by the English and the Celtics, but is now part of France. There is a massive ancient ruin known as the Grand Menhir, or Great Stone, in Brittany. This giant megalith reaches 50 feet high and weighs an incredible 300 tons, or about seven times the largest of the Stonehenge rock carvings. The Grand Menhir has cracked into four large chunks, and this possibly occurred when an unknown group attempted to raise it upright. The stone is not from a local quarry and has somehow been transferred several miles. It is estimated to be several thousand years old, similar to the time of Stonehenge. The largest cranes in the world today would have an extremely difficult task moving such a giant stone object. Clearly, this appears to be a remnant of advanced technology, pointing to the Anunnaki once again. Brittany is the home to over 3,000 smaller stone monuments in the area of Karnak. They are lined up in mysterious formations, like silent tablets standing guard across the countryside. Others are arranged in circular formations, and still another grouping of nine stones is covered by a large capstone, forming a small chamber. The mysterious land around Karnak also features a large mound of earth known as a tumulus. This is a burial ground and features chests, pottery, and other artifacts to honor royal kings and rulers. So I'll pause briefly here, and if you're interested in this topic, please go to my webpage on BBS Radio, click on Odyssey, you'll see a picture of me, and you'll see my two DVDs. I've had them enlarged so you can read all the text and read descriptions, The Sands of Time and The Temples of Stone, my second one, and we can arrange for you to get it via PayPal, the secure server site. Send out $20 and I will ship it right out to you in a few days, and you can enjoy my lectures with I have at least 100 photos in each DVD. I don't want you to listen to or look at boring old me on a stage for 90 minutes. I want you to see pictures. This is all about ancient monuments and relics all across the globe. It's fascinating. So they've been edited quite well. And so please go to my webpage, and you know that's how you support the show and you support my work. I really count on it and really need you to purchase these and enjoy them. And that keeps the ball rolling, that keeps the energy flowing, and I can just go back and make more and more and keep doing this radio show. It's really a joy. So let's go over to America now and talk about the Newport Tower. There's a similar type of tower right here in America known as the Newport Tower of Rhode Island. The grandfather of Benedict Arnold refers to a stone tower in his will, so historians believe it dates back to at least the 1600s. So this may have been a similar remnant to the stone towers in Ireland. It has a similar type of construction. Many believe the early colonists built it, but that appears unlikely as they were fighting fiercely for their survival with the Indians. If they had the resources and energy to devote to such a project, surely they would have built a fortress rather than what appears to be a decorative religious structure. Some believe it was once a windmill, but a stone fireplace on the second floor discounts this theory. Researchers have found runic-type letters which date back to 1000 AD and indicate early Viking construction. The similarity to the mysterious Irish towers leave others to believe that these are remnants of an advanced civilization present in America long before Columbus. So now let's move on. I've been really getting into the work of Zachariah Sitchin lately. And if you're into this field, the ancient astronaut field, it's very important to read his books. He has, probably 15 or so books. And the latest one I've read is The Wars of God and Gods and Men. It's all about the Anunnaki on the battlefield of history. And we have quite a history of endless wars on this planet, continuing up to this day. And it appears that a third party, the Anunnaki, may have engineered them in the past and perhaps even in the present. They may still be pulling some strings. So let's get into this next chapter here. Our history on planet Earth is a long series of endless wars and battles, starting in the Middle East. Researchers in the ancient astronaut field such as Zachariah Sitchin, believes that most of these wars were instigated by the Anunnaki to control land and minerals. Human beings were merely the pawns on the chessboard, while the custodial gods were the kings and queens. And that's God with a lower G, by the way, not to be confused with God, the supreme creator of the universe. Okay? Let's get that clear. Let's start with the historical Battle of Troy. The Greek scribe Homer writes of this legendary war in the Iliad. The romanticized version is that the Greeks launched 1,000 ships in the name of love to force the Trojans to return Helen of Troy to her lawful husband. However, if one looks deeper into this tale, the custodial god Zeus makes the statement that there are too many humans upon the land, and he manipulated the hostility between the two parties to create a void of men, or in other words, a depopulation. The god Apollo fights alongside men in this war, shooting his arrows for 9 long days. The humans finally agree to suspend their fighting, but the Greek gods, or the Anunnaki, send the female goddess Minerva to provoke the Trojans to break their oath of temporary peace and to continue the fighting. There is a reference to advanced technology here, as Minerva shines a powerful, brilliant light in the dead of night to illuminate and expose the enemy. So we're always looking for advanced weaponry and tools, as well as advanced construction, when we're tracking the Anunnaki here, okay? So according to Homer, the custodial gods were not only provoking conflicts, but they were fighting amongst humans and interfering at key points when a truce was being negotiated. Historians almost always assign such tales under the category of mythology. But archaeological evidence has been revealed that the Battle of Troy was an actual event. In 1870, a businessman named Heinrich Schliemann discovered ruins in eastern Turkey that are now regarded today as the actual location of Troy, where the legendary battle was fought around 1300 BC. As we explore the Old Testament, we find many instances where humans were taking orders from deities or the Anunnaki to go to war. One of the Egyptian pharaohs, Thothmes III, writes in his inscriptions of plundering towns, setting fires, and destroying settlements. He describes stealing cattle and goods and capturing prisoners, as well as destroying the crops in the field. The pharaoh then writes that he does all of this in the name of Amon-Ra, or Ra, his god, his custodial god. The most tremendous rivalry of the Old Testament involved this very Egyptian deity, also simply known as Ra, who was the son of Enki, and his main rival, the leader of the Israelis, Jehovah, or Enlil. Those who study the ancient astronaut field recognize Enki and Enlil as the two main custodians who initially settled this planet, and then became bitter enemies, as they fought for the domination of humans, land, and gold. Enki is always symbolized by the snake, so in the Old Testament he was referred to as the snake or the devil, and Enlil was referred to as Jehovah. Okay, so Enlil smote the pharaohs of Egypt with a horrendous series of plagues during this time, attempting to soften their hearts, but also to inflict revenge. The pharaoh Ramses found himself overwhelmed in battle with the Hittites in a battle that occurred in 1286 BC. He calls upon his deity, Ra, to rescue him, and Ra appears on the battlefield to slay thousands of Hittites. So it's another example that Ra was actually, walked on 2 feet and was, in a way mortal, just like human beings. You know, the Anunnaki, according to all of these tablets, they walked amongst humans side by side. And if you remember Jehovah out in the desert during the Exodus, he was right there in the tents. He would never let anybody see him, but he was behind the curtains. So Ramses depicted the fight with drawings and pictograms which show a giant about twice the size of a human shooting large arrows towards the enemy. But they also possessed more powerful weapons than bows and arrows. The Old Testament refers to emissaries of Enlil visiting the town of Sodom and Gomorrah and smote the people with a type of weapon of brilliant light that instantly blinded them. The female goddess Ishtar wore a garment of divine fire, and wearing a helmet described as radiant headwear, rained fire upon Arabia. One of the sons or human offspring of the god Ishir-Hadan also fought with his weapons of brilliance and used it to blind the pharaoh and turn him into a madman. So, once again, these are all references to advanced technology in our ancient writings and very advanced weaponry. There is also reference to travel far beyond the chariots of the day. Cyrus was one of the human kings who controlled most of the Middle East around 500 BC. He claimed that this land was in the name of his controlling deity named Ahura Mazda. And I talked about Ahura Mazda in my first DVD, The Sands of Time, because they describe him as flying around the land in a basically a UFO, a winged disc. And it's an example that they may have had aerial craft back then to monitor the situation and monitor humans. So please check out my first DVD, The Sands of Time, and definitely learn more about Ahura Mazda, one of the ancient custodial gods who may have been flying a craft, a spacecraft, during that time. So in the last few minutes here, we're going to talk about some of the news headlines in the day. It's such filtered news we have that many of us have turned to the Internet, and I'll be reading a few stories from DavidIke.com. Now, David is no stranger to this network. He's been a very frequent guest on many of the programs here. And he doesn't speak live that often, but he is coming to San Francisco in September, late September. So you may want to check that out. Go to DavidIke.com. It's DavidIke.com. So every day he has headlines, and I know a lot of people think, well, he just deals with reptilian aliens. Well, not really. If you go to his website, I would say 95% of his headlines have to do with politics and just what's going on in the news, actually. So some of his stories today and recently have really been talking about how the UK, Britain, is really becoming a police state. And if you read the book 1984... it talks about more and more and more control of society and cameras everywhere and microchipping the population. And this headline article says the UK is to begin microchipping prisoners. So they're going to start in the prisons. And they're further along in their loss of rights than America because they've been under the control of the European Union, this giant monolith, this megalith, that has about 40 countries in Europe under its lock and key. So there really isn't much local representation anymore in the UK and Britain. And more and more cameras are everywhere. Apparently, he's reporting there's one camera now for every 14 people in Britain, and more control of society. So that's what we're fighting here in America. The North American Union has been stalled. They wanted it in place by now. By 2005, I believe, they wanted Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. to be a giant conglomerate, a huge corporation, really, with just massive amounts of cheap labor, no more middle class, certainly no more Constitution, no more Declaration of Independence, no more Bill of Rights, just a board or a council that would monitor the giant piece of land and have a huge companies and factories with cheap labor, and then a very small elite population, a very wealthy population, and then once again a very large lower class, but no more middle class. So NAFTA is the big key to this puzzle. It's taking good, well-paying jobs out of America. All of those big factories in the Midwest that were there 40 years ago are gone. They've gone overseas. And people are being pushed into service industries which simply don't pay as much, which may pay only minimum wage or a little bit better. And this is a way to break up the middle class. David Icke is reporting on this Larry Sinclair story. There's been a media blackout on Larry Sinclair. It reminds me of the Jeff Gannon story a couple of years ago. Jeff Gannon was kind of in the White House asking George Bush questions, but it turned out he was a male prostitute, and he stayed at the White House many, many times. And the press had a complete blackout on the Jeff Gannon story. And now it's happening again. Larry Sinclair is a man who's been for 6 months talking about some encounters he's had doing drugs with Obama. This is what he claims, 8 years ago or so. And he wants to be heard. He had a press conference this week at the National Press Club. And his story has been all over the Internet, but hasn't been in the mainstream media. So you just have to look into this one for yourself and see if you believe he's credible or not. He's had many, many interviews at Jeff Rentz. Rentz is a reporter who's been covering the Larry Sinclair story. And he sounds reasonable and credible. Doesn't sound like an insane person. But if you go to Jeff Rentz at Rentz.com, you can hear the Larry Sinclair interviews and decide for yourself what you think. I mean, don't let anyone force you to believe one thing or the other. I mean, listen to Larry Sinclair and hear his story. And Webster Tarpley is really the ultimate Washington insider. I think it's really important that our audience go to Webster Tarpley, go to his website, and listen to his radio show. It's on GCNLive.com. I'll give that again, GCNLive.com. And he has a weekly show, but they keep running it all week long. You can listen to it anytime you want. And Webster Tarpley has been following this Larry Sinclair story, too, because it, you know, we need to find out if it's true or not, and the only way we can do that is if we have a free press, a free media, not a controlled media or a controlled press. We need to flesh out all those candidates and find out everything we can about John McCain and Obama, because these are two, you know, candidates that may have their finger on the nuclear button. We need to know everything about them. I think the press used to do it. They certainly did it with Bill Clinton. He went through excruciating personal affairs and Jennifer Flowers, and maybe the press used to do it more, and they're not really doing it at all at this point. Gary Hart, when he ran for president, was his personal life was certainly looked at very closely, so it used to occur, but there's less and less media now than there was 15, 20 years ago when Gary Hart and Bill Clinton were trying to get into office. It's been condensed and consolidated. So those are some of the stories that David Icke is covering. So I encourage you to check out Webster Tarpley, check out his, you know, blogs and websites, check out David Icke, and really get yourself up to date and up to speed with what's happening in this world, because the news is so filtered, for sure. Once again, we had Carmela Cook was our guest tonight. Her store is called Essential Elements, so check that out in Portland, Oregon. And she talked, I think the big surprise to me was just learning about bee pollen, and that's something I want to try as a supplement to get all my vitamins and nutrients. And check out my DVDs on ancient mysteries. Check out The Sands of Time and The Temples of Stone, and they are at my webpage. Just click on Odyssey on Monday nights at 8. That will take you right to my webpage, and you can see the front and back covers of my DVDs. And in pretty in specific detail, I really list all of the topics. As you can tell by my show, I'm a very detailed, specific person. I don't really talk in generalities. I'm not a vague person. I'm very specific and detailed. And that's how my DVDs are. I go through each topic, whether it's Stonehenge or Easter Island or Yanaguni, the underwater ruins in Japan, or lost maps of Atlantis or what have you. I go through it in pretty explicit detail, because this is all theory, but I want to back it up with as much evidence as I can possibly find. So we're all out of time, and my show's on every other week. And check out my archives. I've got plenty of shows for you to listen to in the archives. And I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you for joining me tonight on Odyssey. Have a good night.